I'd like to ask Dr. Leland Jones to present the data from the HERO trial.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great honor to be here. As many of you that know me, I am very open in style, so I'm going to relate the HERO trial from a personal point of view, and I'm going to highlight the key design elements, what makes the trial different, and also where we're going from here. I present this trial, obviously, on behalf of Professor Picard, on behalf of the HERO Executive and Steering Committee. Just as a reminder on this, in case some of you are not quite familiar, the Breast International Group pulls together about 20 other cooperative groups. And in fact, in this trial, there were about 30 in total. And for those of you that are unfamiliar, Hera is the Greek goddess representing women. And of course, it fitted in beautifully with Herceptin adjuvant, her adjuvant. So that's the basis behind the trial. So I am honored and humbled to present this. It's the work of 30 cooperative groups, 478 centers, 39 countries, and over 5,000 women. And just to show the power of this trial, at one point in April last year, we were accruing over 240 patients per month. So this is the HERO trial design, which was basically any chemotherapy regimen. So this was the definitive test of plus or minus Herceptin. And bearing in mind it could be any chemotherapy regimen, obviously the Herceptin had to be sequenced afterwards. So the other element on this was that I had done a lot of work on the Q3 weekly regimen. The drug has a half-life of 28 days. It's a monoclonal antibody. And the three-week regimen at that point we felt was validated. And all of the other monoclonals now are being run on 2-3 weekly basis. So the three-weekly regimen was incorporated. And the last element on this was the fact that on either the weekly or the three-weekly regimen, it takes 18 weeks to get to steady state. So we felt that the duration question was critical, and especially in the work of Rich Pietras, who was in Dennis's group, that prolonged attenuation of HER2 signaling is advantageous. We decided to ask a duration question. The five elements in the design was any accepted adjuvant chemotherapy regimen. Trastuzumab was not initiated until the completion of all chemo and radiation therapy, and the median for this was about 8 months from the beginning, from the absolute beginning of adjuvant diagnosis. And then the trastuzumab was administered on a Q3 weekly schedule, and it is the only trial asking a duration question. And as Dr. Love mentioned before, there is a large proportion of node negative patients. All of the HER2 testing was centrally confirmed as to either IHC3+ or FISH positive. And in terms of adjuvant chemotherapy, the vast majority got a FAC or FEC regimen. 2/3 of the patients had a fairly routine anthracycline-based regimen. 6% had something like CMF or non-anthracycline-based regimen. And only 25% had an anthracycline-taxane combination. And of course, I do not need to tell you that in the rest of the world that anthracycline-taxane combinations tend to be reserved for more aggressive disease patients. And so when you look at the forest plots, you will see that group does a little worse, and presumably that is the link with these being more sick patients. A full 1/3 of these patients are node negative. And we have to give credit to HERA for at least getting a very large sample set of node-negative patients. Hormone receptor, as we know, in this population, you get less estrogen receptor positivity, so these are half and half, very similar to the joint NSABP intergroup data. This next one is one of the absolute key slides because it shows the cardiotoxicity in this trial. So if you're looking at the decrease by over 10 ejection fraction points and the LVEF less than 50%, it is 7.1 versus 2.2%. If you're looking at the same LVEF criteria with a CHF New York classification 3-4, it is 0.5% versus 0%. And the hard numbers on that are, in fact, 9 in the Herceptin group and 0 in the observation group. And if you are looking at the cardiac death, it is 0 versus 0.1%. In fact, there was that one cardiac death in the observational arm. So these are exquisitely low numbers for class 3-4 CHF. It's 9 versus 0. This is the disease-free survival. The hazard ratio is extremely impressive at 0.54. The p-value is 0.0001. This is after 1 year of median follow-up. A number of people have tried to do cross-trial comparisons, and they've talked about lead time bias with having a later randomization, etc. I think the data is far too early to make any of these speculative observations. I think the one thing that has to be confirmed across all the trials, including Dennis's BCRG, is the results are simply staggering. This, again, like Ed made the comment in terms of distant disease events, this to me is the most important slide in many ways, where you have distant events reduced from 154 to 85. Huge reductions in relapse-free survival, huge reductions in distant disease-free survival, and the overall survival is not yet statistical. So these are the conclusions that trastuzumab given every 3 weeks for 1 year significantly reduces the risk of distant mets. The key one is that the clinical benefits are independent of the patient's baseline characteristics. And the key message here is that Herceptin therapy is associated with a low incidence of severe symptomatic congestive heart failure when given in this way. In terms of our own practice, and this is practice-driven, in our younger, fitter patients, we tend to give it the intergroup NSABP way in terms of therapy. For our older patients and those who have any compromised cardiac function, we're tending more to give it the HERA way. And of course, we await anxiously, Dennis, your mature results, which will be presented in San Antonio. The results regarding the optimal duration of therapy, 1 year versus 2 years, will be available by 2008. And on that, I thank the 5,090 women that participated in this and all of the intense work and the investigators that made this possible. Thank you.
Thanks. To swing back to the practical again a little bit, well, we've now seen the data with node-negative patients. Dr. Slaman, you have a woman in her early 50s, perfectly healthy, no heart disease, ER-negative, PR-negative tumor who's under 1 centimeter, node-negative, 0.8, 0.9 centimeters. What, in a non-protocol setting, would you discuss with her or recommend to her?
I think the critical thing is that if it's a HER2-positive tumor, that she receive Herceptin-based therapy. I mean, asking me that question is asking a biased person that question, so let me say that with that caveat. I think that all of the other parameters that we look at and we talk about, size, node positivity, node negativity, ER-positive, ER-negative, are not irrelevant, but less relevant. The driving factor in a HER2-positive tumor is the HER2 alteration. For not all the patients, we don't know why some of them have it and don't respond at all. That's to be determined still. But if I'm confronted with a patient that has a HER2-positive tumor, then it's going to be Herceptin-based therapy. The choice of chemotherapy at this point is dealer's choice.
Dr. Kaufman, a lot of people want to use the criteria for trials in applying decision-making. The patient I just described, I believe, would not have been eligible for the HERA trial because the tumor was too small. Would you offer trastuzumab to that patient?
I would agree with Dr. Slaman's comments. I think that we really have to look at the biology of HER2 positivity. And as you just pointed out, actually, the patient you described would not be eligible for our intergroup trial either, but she was awful close to it with an 8 or 9 millimeter cancer. Our cutoff, if you remember, was 1 centimeter. So, yeah, I think we have to use some judgment. And the issue is where the threshold is going to be. If I had somebody with a 1 or 2 millimeter cancer, I'm not sure that I would recommend Herceptin in that setting. But certainly somebody who is close to the eligibility criteria for our studies, I think it's very reasonable to consider.
Norm?
I would have more limited enthusiasm for treating with Herceptin, I think, than my colleagues. I think going back to B21, this is a group that does extremely well, regardless of HER status, regardless of other parameters. Granted, that was an ER-positive population, but even the small tumors that were ER-negative had a very good outcome. I think it just underscores the fact that we need more objective parameters to determine risk in this subset of women.
Dr. Leland Jones?
I am very much with Dennis. I am very much a believer of the biology. We will only take it 6 months out beyond the completion of all chemotherapy, and that is a fairly rigid guideline, and the 1 centimeter is a rigid guideline, at least within our own center at McGill. But having said that, I'm a very strong believer with Dennis of the biology.
Ed, how are you approaching this question in your practice? I'm sure there are lots of people coming back now bringing this up.
Well, you know, I think that the issue is really balancing three issues here.
One is to try to get a handle on what kind of residual risk there is after that period of time. You know, one of the problems with when you look at the curves of patients who have, you know, a large number of lymph nodes, for instance, and so on, they're continuing to have an event all the way out. And so, you know, if you have somebody who you estimate still has a significant residual risk, now you get to a point where with HER2-positive breast cancer, I guess at some point, if it were going to recur, it would have happened by now. You know, I think it would be odd for HER2-positive breast cancer to have a recurrence like 10 or 15 years out, something like that. But I think it's really a matter of trying to get a handle on the residual risk that the patient has at that point in time. And then also to take into account, you know, issues of potential cardiac toxicity if you use it at this point, which shouldn't be a major consideration if you're using it by itself. And then what kind of incremental efficacy could you expect to get there? But I think that, you know, with the patients that I see, if they have, you know, 4 or 5 positive nodes or something like that, and they're out even 2 years, 2.5 years, then I think they still have a lot of residual risk. And the problem with all of this discussion is that there are not absolute cutoffs here, and it has to come down with balancing all these factors and the individual physician trying to have a discussion with the patient about all of this stuff.
Okay. Dr. Kaufman,